You just downloaded the show that was nominated Best Entertainment Podcast of 2013, only to be beaten by The Walking Dead. This is Survivor Talk with D&D. I'm Dwayne.
And I'm David.
And we're just two best friends talking about the show we love, Survivor. And tonight is our last preseason show for Survivor Cagayan, or however you say it. And we have a special guest tonight. Everybody, say hello in your own cars, in your offices, to Andy Baker. Andy Baker, say hi to everybody.
Hey there, everybody. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You are very welcome. It is our pleasure.
We had a choice.
What, David? What'd you say?
I said we had a choice.
I'll send you the photos.
Wait a minute. We don't want him writing a Baker's Dozen about Survivor Talk with D&D. Well, never mind. I didn't say that.
Well, I wouldn't mind him writing a Baker's Dozen about as long as he's nice.
which Dwayne's way of saying as long as I'm ranked number one. That's all I care. Yeah.
Well, as long as he says Survivor Talk with Dwayne and David.
Saying it wrong. But anyway, we're wasting time here. Let's go.
We got all the time in the world. So we have Andy with us, and then, of course, we have our trusty D&D prospect. If you watch Sons of Anarchy, you know what we're talking about. Shayna. Hello, Shayna.
Hello.
Shayna's always been so nice and quiet.
She hasn't been patched in yet?
No. Yeah, you just didn't hear her say hi. She said hello.
No, he didn't get the Dwayne didn't get the joke. No.
So Shayna's going to be watching your YouTube comments and relaying them to us whenever we need them. And also, she'll probably be putting her own two cents. As you know, she has written three blogs. Is it three, Shayna, that you've written?
Yeah.
Preseason? Yeah, she's written three preseason blogs, more than Andy has. I mean, she's written three preseason blogs, although Andy's word-wise is equivalent to Shayna's, like, seven. So,
Fishback used to give me grief for saying in 5,000 words what could be said in five.
That's all right. So let's get right into it. Andy, are you looking forward to the season?
Absolutely. I mean, well, okay, I'll back up for a second. Yes and no. Absolutely am, because it's all newbies, which... the last one we had was One World, which may not have been the best season, but it's really nice seeing newbies try to make sense of the game without having a whole bunch of returning players around. My one worry about the season is that Probst has been so tepid in his praise of it,
right?
That I worry that it doesn't play out in the dramatic ways that he tends to like. I just wonder if we're going to get something somewhat predictable, particularly post-merge. But
yeah, because there was something in your first blog that you said which led me towards my pick. And I remember that because of his lack of excitement, it kind of led to the idea that the man crush would not be there.
Yeah.
So that it's very possible that a woman or more than one woman made it to the finals.
Right.
And I said, okay, that actually makes sense because it's true. You can kind of sense that in some seasons. You know, if it's a really good season, Probst will go off on it. But otherwise, I took that as part of my reason for picking who I picked.
Yeah, I'm thinking that you're going to end up seeing someone who's solid strategically but isn't terribly exciting. But, you know, that the people who are instrumental in making the end game happen are cut out late and somebody ends up getting it having ridden the right coattails. That's it. But I'm hoping I'm wrong, and I'm just hoping that these people are as interesting as they seem. You read Jeff Pittman's preseason column, he was talking about how a lot of these people actually have a genuine shot, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Less cannon fodder out there.
Right. Now, Jeff Pittman is the creator of True Dork Times, correct?
That's correct.
And that is where your blog is, The Baker's Dozen?
Yep. It is.
You can link to his blog from our website, or you can go look it up. Although I looked up Baker's Dozen today and got a bunch of bakeries. So just go to our website, and we have a nice big picture of him on the right, and you can click on it, take you right to his most current blog.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about Survivor, in the sense that to me, one of the most important parts is the first three episodes, the first two or three. Because in the Philippines, it was looking like if Tan Deng lost, Lisa was history. You know, even if Scoopin had that alliance with her that he's told us about, I can't imagine him going against the rest of the tribe to keep her. I mean, he might have figured out a way, but she was just so separated from the tribe and having so many, hashtag breakdowns or whatever it was. And but because they never lost, she's in the final three.
Right.
Now, she finished a distant third, or distant tied for second, excuse me. But, you know, the first two or three episodes can really steer the season. They will steer the season, in my opinion. And that's kind of how I see this group lining up. Some people are going to get lucky, and some people are going to be unfortunate that their tribe just didn't do well in the beginning.
Yeah, you're absolutely right in that. I think, you know, a lot of people are pegging Cass as one of those could go very deep or could go really early. If they lose early and she doesn't do well in the challenges, she could end up going. But, you know, if she sticks around and then sort of, you know, gets into the right kind of alliance, you know, when they, you know, do a swap, or, you know, definitely when you get to the merge, they'll ignore her for a while. And she's the kind of person who could really put a stamp on a season. But, you know, sometimes the shape of the season, you know, sometimes you play the game, sometimes the game plays you.
Yeah,
because who knows how far Zane could have gotten, you know, really.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, when you are literally smoking on the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I quit smoking like 2 hours ago.
I'm putting out my last cigarette right now.
I'm sure that there is lost footage of him trying to light up any kind of foliage that he found on the island.
Maybe there's nicotine in here. Maybe.
Yes.
Is that a nicotine tree? Okay, let's get it.
Well, hey, Andy, which tribe, and you've probably said this in your blog, for the bin, I'm going to ask you stuff, and you may have had it in your blog. But that's okay, because not everybody's read it yet. So which tribe do you think is going to struggle the most at the beginning? Not like socially, but in the challenges, that's going to make their tribe get smaller quicker.
I can't get around the possibility that the Brains are just physically the weakest of the three. And if they don't lose the first challenge, or certainly one of the first two, I'll be shocked.
Right.
Just because, I mean, because certainly you're going to have a certain number of challenges, spots in the challenge where you can hide weakness.
Right.
Kind of like when Cochran got to just pull a rope in a challenge. or do a key. I mean, where you can
there
hide
you go, people.
But I think they've got too many people to try to hide. I mean, I think between Cass and David and, you know, Spencer certainly isn't showing a heck of a lot of muscle mass. There's not going to be enough spots to hide.
They've got more than one Abby Maria.
So. But Spencer's, you know, Spencer has the advantage of being, what, 19 or 20 or something like that?
Yeah, he's 21, so he's not going to be – so that's why he wouldn't get targeted, I think. But someone like Cass or David, if they fall apart in that first challenge, I think they're just going to identify physical weakness. Like, we need to come in second, so someone's got to go.
Yeah. Or the other extreme, if one of them gets too bossy – or calls for something, to me, like Russell Swan did at the beginning of Philippines, he could have been gone. If he wasn't a returnee, he'd have probably been gone, you know, just for the fact that he was trying to be a dictator.
Although, I mean, he had both Zane and Angie on his tribe, so.
Exactly.
Hey, kinda... watch out. Angie, the cookie woman.
Angie didn't like my preseason predictions.
You don't think?
She read them, and she just tweeted me, "Rude!"
Yes. Hey, let's go back to what you said about David and Cass being possibly the weaker ones on the tribe. David doesn't strike me as someone who's going to be weak physically.
It's all a relative thing. I think Jatia and Tasha are strong physically.
Right.
He's a smaller guy.
True.
And, you know, Garrett obviously is, you know, jacked to all oblivion, and so it comes down to those three, and I think Cass is the weakest. But if David is rubbing people the wrong way, trying to order people around, and he's not contributing physically, the axe could fall on him.
Okay, so how do you see Braun doing then?
I went back and forth. I actually pegged Braun as being, you know, someone is losing in the first two, the first two challenges, but then saw the title of the episode of the premiere being Hot Woman with a Grudge. And so I figured, okay, a beauty must be losing. Because I thought Braun, I thought, you know, super big strength like Cliff and Tony, when you're up against two tribes who are not designed that way, they're not going to have challenges that favor that particularly. So I thought Braun might fall apart, but now I'm thinking it's brains and beauty to start out. But Braun's will start to fall apart because just the hunger thing is going to get to Cliff. And it seems like Tony is ordering everybody around and kind of ticking them off. Obviously, we've seen Tony on Twitter, and he just seems like a nice, funny, family guy.
Tony's
but
on Twitter.
You are on that island when you don't have food, and you want to take charge. And if he ends up being, and we'll talk about this later, I know, if he ends up being their leader, he'll take that really seriously start giving those kinds of orders. And so that may fall apart there as well.
I wonder who's going to be the puzzle person for the Braun, because I think the brains could be any of them. I think LJ is going to step up and be he claims to be the puzzle person. But we talked about it last week, and Dwayne had a good point. No matter how far your Braun gets you a lead, the puzzle can bring you all the way back, just like it did last year with Tina almost solving that puzzle.
It's true.
It could go either way.
I'm trying to think if in the preview on the TV Guide Network, they showed some of that first challenge, and I seem to recall at least Lindsay is doing the puzzle, and it might have been with Sarah, although I'm not sure.
I think it was two girls. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see, like you, who's going to rise in the Braun and the puzzle department, because you know those early challenges are going to have them.
Yeah. Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if someone like Lindsay and Sarah is stepping up and letting the big guys and let Woo go into the water.
Woo!
So I think I went along with your pick for our questions, and this will be question number one about
Hold on.
I'm just talking about the same subject. Same
Go
subject.
Ahead.
Stop it. You said you were going to be there for looks.
I'm sorry.
I can keep talking. I picked beauty to do well because I think Braun is to one extreme and brains will be to another extreme. And I just said, you know what, logically, you should pick one or the other, so I'm going to go right in the middle and pick beauty. And I think they could do well. Physically, I think they could do well. And I think the title is going to come from beauty. And we'll talk about that later, too.
I think the title is a red herring. I think they want you to think that a beauty is going to be going off. But I think there'll be drama on the beauty tribe, but they won't lose.
That may very well be the case. And if that's the case, then I think you're going to see a brain and a Braun go. I have a sense like they're going to try to do whatever they can to avoid a total matzing happening and allowing one tribe to get crushed, particularly on a season where they're trying to show you like who's better, brain, brawn, beauty, and so they're not going to want one tribe killed right up front.
Yeah, because they're hoping the brains are more entertaining for the strategic part as well, I would think.
Yeah.
I would think they're in the meat of the season. They really want as many brains there as possible to show that that's what it takes to get that far in the game and do well, even if you're on a losing challenge team.
Yeah,
and I think they're also going to count on them because if you saw in the pregame interviews, they're pretty articulate. Mm-hmm. They're going to want the narrators to emerge from the brains, I would think. I mean, there's only so much country gumption that you can get from the beauty tribe. What kind of confessionals are you going to get from them?
Mm-hmm.
And Braun, it's only so much grunting that they really want. So.
We built shelter. Shelter was built.
Cliff says, I put on roof all by myself.
I mean, I know he's tall, but then you see him standing next to some of these guys, and it's he is massive.
Yes, he is. You having a dog problem over there? He's having a dog problem. I know. I thought Tony was like, that's a big dude, and then they showed him standing next to Cliff in that challenge, and Tony's almost like half as tall as Cliff is.
Good yeah, person. And it's funny how Jeff Pittman, I think, wrote in his column about how really, really want to see that shot of Cliff standing next to David.
Resting his arm on top of him.
David's a smaller guy. I mean, be up to his kneecaps.
I agree that I also see the brain tribe struggling for some reason. I just I just have this feeling that they're going to be too far behind in the challenge. And I think even some of the pictures they show, you can't see anybody behind them when they're pulling the cart, or excuse me, when Garrett's pulling the cart, and they're trying to push it. And I guess they give away that you don't see anybody behind them unless they're taking several laps out of it. But
yeah, no,
you know, it's going to come down to if they can get to the puzzle.
Yeah, I think I saw the same thing you did, where they have to take apart the cart and then slide it through spots.
Yes.
That's where they fall behind, because the early shot showed them they were in it, and then after that there was nobody behind them, and I think physically they just fall apart there. And one thing that you're hitting on, the Beauty Tribe, they have more people who have survivor useful strength.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're longer limb, they're lithe, they're limber, they're thin. It's just, you know, although Wu, obviously, on Braun, has that kind of Aussie strength. But that's really what works for you in Survivor. The big, really strong guys, there aren't many that have gone super deep. Obviously, Rupert, but if you go back and look back at Pearl Islands, which is a great season, and that's Rupert at his best, they kept having challenges which involved, okay, sit there, really strong guy, and hold on to this thing.
Right, yeah.
But they've sort of moved away from that.
I wonder if they get the sense of who they are at the beginning, because if I'm on the Beauty Tribe, what a motivational tool to say, look, they're going to be the strong ones, they're going to be the smart ones, we need to be the team, we need to work together, we need to get along, we need to do everything we can to help each other, and we can take out both of these groups that are supposed to be so strong in the survival world, you know. And I, if they got somebody that pulls them together like that, I think that would be if it's smart for the other five to say, yes, let's do that, and let's work together and just get along.
I think they're going to have a distinct advantage over, certainly, though someone pointed out, I listened to something somewhere, and it struck me as very, very real, very true, that the Brains Tribe is at a massive disadvantage in that all of them are going to look at each other and say, you were cast in part, if not entire, because of your brains, and I can't trust you.
Right.
Because you were brought on here to be scheming and backstabbing and try to outmaneuver me. I want to work with brains. I want to, with Braun or with Beauty, where I can trust them. Nobody on that Brains Tribe is going to trust anybody.
Right.
Right.
They're going to fracture soon after any sort of swap, and getting there is going to be difficult because they're just going to have to make quick alliances of convenience with every intention of jumping somewhere else.
Right.
Well, I know we're not doing all the questions, but since we're talking about number one, did you want to keep your pick at Beauty, or did you want to change it?
What was the question again?
Which tribe is going to win the most challenges before any shuffle or merge?
Yeah, I'll go with Beauty. I'm with you. I think they're just most likely. I just think some of those big guys are going to fall apart.
Yeah.
Jeffra's going to kick everybody's butt.
Who?
Jeffra.
Okay, yeah.
You know, you bought her hat and wore it for the podcast tonight.
That's right.
It's funny. I mean, a lot of people are getting Natalie White vibes off of her, and I am too, frankly. If she gets into the right alliance, she's going to get deep. It's just a question of if they have time and the opportunity to cut her before you get to the final three.
See, I'm going to be looking for the Lisa Wetchel player. You know, who's going to get by the first couple weeks because they're on the winning tribe? You know, could it be Bryce? Could it be Cass? Could it be Jeffra? Or, you know, any of those people. Not saying that they're the worst of their tribes, but I'm just saying there's that one. That's the one I love about Survivor. You never know from day one to day 39 who's going to be sitting there because of a certain challenge or because of a certain tribe.
Yeah, and it's funny. In my latest column, someone left a comment about, you know, Probst was a bit mean and said that Spencer and Morgan, neither one of them had a chance to win the game. And that's a frustrating thing that they cast people like that. But the argument can be made, you know, well, you know, the strangest of people have gotten late, deep into the game and gotten to the very end. But it's still, if you picture Spencer or Morgan, how do they get to the end but still have a chance to win? Those are two different things, getting deep and winning. Lots of different kinds of people can get there, but not many with a chance to win.
Yeah, because season two, Tina wasn't even on the starting lineup. She was in reserve, and she came in and won the whole thing because Colby took the wrong person. But otherwise, that's another story.
But we all loved it when he did it, didn't we?
No, I did not.
Let me tell you, after that
episode, I thought it was horrible strategy. I just liked it on a personal level.
Oh, I did too. And it was after that episode that I went to my computer and pulled up the application for Survivor. And I started to fill it out, and my wife came up behind me and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Honey, I love this show, and I want it." She goes, "No, you're not." And then that was the end of my dreams to get on Survivor.
That would be called whipped.
Happy life.
You know, I'm sure we'll talk about this at some point, but Australia is the season that made me fall in love with the show, and in particular just showing how harsh it really is for them, because when you got down to that final three and they had, you know, the camp had been flooded, they didn't have any food left.
Right.
And Heath was, there's a shot of him that I've never been able to shake about the show that says so much to me about what the show becomes. Running through a field with his arms out, trying and scaring grasshoppers or crickets out of this tall grass and pulling them out of the air and eating them.
Yes.
Because it's not that hard anymore, is it?
No, it's changed. And the players are pretty open, and now they're including footage of the players talking about that. So at that point, the producers truly don't care of having any sense that these people are really starving, because they're not. They are hungry early on, but once the reward challenges start coming, they're pretty well fed.
You don't get much more raw than Africa, though.
Oh, God.
Man.
That was one season where I would have lost my mind, where you just have to sit around. You can't go anywhere. There's no water to go.
I can see the cameraman about week one, at the end of week one. Who chose this spot?
Yeah.
Why are we out here?
I need a raise.
And just think, it's like you're sitting there at night and just, again, one of those shots that you can never forget.
Yeah.
You see these sort of somewhat sickly lions, you know, you see their glowing eyes and you hear...
Yeah. Yes.
I'd be just like, vote me out. Vote me out.
That's what you ask the cameraman. You got a gun, right? You got a really big gun?
Although there was a season, what season was it? Someone was talking about it on an interview where whenever they went out into the woods, it might have been Australia. It may have been Scoopin who said something about it, where when you would go off by yourself, the cameraman would have to pull out a gun because there were snakes. And certain kinds of snakes that they were supposed to shoot on site.
Oh, wow.
Where eventually you just didn't go far from camp to have your little private conversation.
Right.
You just didn't trust that this cameraman who's a camera over his shoulder is going to be able to pull out the gun and shoot the snake from distance.
Yeah. Do I get the footage of the snake biting Scoopin, or do I shoot the snake? Do I lose my job?
Heard an interview about, it was Probst and or Burnett talking about when Scoopin fell into the fire and how in an honest moment they had the dual reaction of, on the one hand, this is horrible, this is terrible, we need to do something. On the other hand, it's like, please tell me someone got footage. Please tell me we've got some coverage of this, because this is going to make great television.
Yes.
Oh, man. That's an image I can't get out of my head. Him standing up in the water and his skin hanging from his arms to the water.
Yeah.
So that made you love Survivor. And when did you start? Because it is well known that you have been trying to get on Survivor for a long time.
Yeah.
Is that when you tried to start getting on?
His Twitter handle is Get On Survivor.
Yeah. Well, you can see it on the bottom of his overlay. It says Get On Survivor. Or Outspoken Survivor.
Love the overlays, by the way. You're far more tech advanced than I am. But you know, the trying to get on the show, I sort of did it on and off back in the days where you had to physically create something and send it to them. Now it's so incredibly easy to make your application video and submit it digitally. But I finally got it into my head, because I had always been that armchair quarterback, you know, my wife having to put up with me, you know, wanting to dissect every show afterwards and cornering my friends and talking about it, I finally just sat down and I was like, you know what? One World is coming out. I am just going to write a little essay on each of the characters and talk about, you know, what I think their chances are and why. And, you know, it just so happened to be, it was an unspoiled season, so no one could say, well, you're clearly just finding a boot list and creating a story.
Yeah.
And ended up, by chance, you know, predicting what was going to happen to Quinlan. And he started spreading the word about the blog. And I had pegged Kim Spradlin as winning, and it just sort of went from there. But so that sort of started the whole, you know what, I'm going to write this thing because I want to get on Survivor. And being, you know, having applied many times before and never having pinged on their radar, I was like, how do I ping?
Right.
How do you convince them? Well, I'm going to start writing about them and maybe get to know some of the players and maybe get in touch with Rob Cesternino and try to, you know, get on the inside a little bit. And I don't know if it's hurt more than helped, but, you know, it's turned into this fun thing that you do. But really, the end goal is to want to actually get to play.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you started writing the same season we started podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you started writing because your wife got tired of listening to it, and then we started podcasting because Dwayne thought people would want to listen to it, and I told him he was crazy.
Well, not our wives.
But. Right.
But it's true, though. There is – the nice thing was once I started doing it, and I'm sure you discovered this too, people – there's this subculture of Survivor. It's the reason why 10 million fans tune in every season, good or bad. It never fluctuates all that much anymore. It's because – people are passionate about the show, and they consume these podcasts.
Yeah.
And you know, whether you guys
group is awesome. We love our Facebook group. They come out of everywhere, and they're across the world that we talk to. We never would have thought we'd have met all these people. Dwayne's like, well, let's just start a Facebook page. I said, okay, we'll try that. And now it's a community of over 250 people so far, and we talk about everything, TV shows and Survivor.
Yeah.
So it's a great culture, like you said, to walk into.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's a whole lot of fun, which is why we do it. Literally, two best friends talking about the show we love. And
yeah, it ain't for the money, I can tell you that.
No. Although, if you're going to shop Amazon, you might as well use the link from our website.
Segway, beautifully done.
Like Tony.
Tony bought a bunch of stuff.
Did he?
Thank you, Tony, yes. And you're
Team
going
TV.
To
there you go.
Team TV. Speaking of which, did you see the logo that he made?
Yeah, that's a good logo.
It is.
I thought it was me for a minute, but then I said, no, I don't have a tattoo like that. So.
I posted on Twitter, you know, Tony, after all this hype, you better not be voted off in the first 3 weeks. You know, I mean, the guy's he is like bombing Twitter, like 2,000 tweets a day or something.
He is. I worry that it's a sign that he goes early, but I hope he doesn't. I hope what we're getting in the previews is just some dramatic footage that, you know, they yanked out just to set us up, to think of him that way. But I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. And then, of course, every time he tweets something, Cass has to get her two cents in.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted out something about how, because then Spencer got into it. And it's just, you know, either it's great performance art, or I'm beginning to think that they all end up in, you know, pre-merge boots hanging out in Loser's Lodge together and not liking each other there.
Right.
But I don't want to come to those conclusions. I don't want to think that. I just want the season to unfold.
Yeah.
But it's entertaining anyway.
All right, David.
Well, I say let's talk about the day one thing before we get into it, because we can do the questions throughout the show. Let's talk about the day one stuff that's going to happen.
Sure. The leaders and the weakest. Yes.
I really like what you said in your blog about the weakest. I also hope that they use it strategically and not fall into the CBS desires.
Yeah, I debated this a little bit with Jeff Pittman about because it would be smart to game the system, and especially since you have so many people who are knowledgeable about the show, they're fans, they've seen the precedent. You know, in Token Sheens, the people who were voted the weakest were given a ride. I can't remember if it was Chopper or Jeep, but they were given a ride to the camp. And I mean, the fear always is, you know, they sort of planted it a long time ago when people who didn't get picked ended up not even getting to play the game.
Right.
And so the worry would be, okay, there's 18 of us here, whoever's the weakest, oh, hey, around the corner, we have our alternates and they're going to come out and replace the weakest player.
Oh, that'd be horrible.
And so that's the fear, but it's not really a reasonable one. There's nobody around. You're 18 on the mat. They're not going to go down to 15 on day one. And so you have to run the gamble and say, let's game this thing. Either volunteer to go back to camp so that you can get your hands on the idol, or send someone back there that you trust.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, there's so much contact between these players before day one. Not verbal, but they spend so much time in Ponderosa in the days leading up to it, and they've seen each other in casting. They already have some ideas of who they want to team up with. They don't know who's on whose tribe yet, but they see each other enough to be like, okay, these are the kinds of people I'd want to work with.
Yeah.
So pick one of those people and say, hey, you know, I'm going to make you weakest. Now just go find the idol, because you know it's going to come with an idol clue.
Yeah. Right.
And let's consolidate power now, because you have a 6-person tribe. There's no place to hide, and the strangest thing could end up getting you booted. So you want that idol. I mean, that's why Penner in Philippines was so hell-bent on getting that idol in those first couple of days.
Right.
It's the only way to make sure.
See, me being the suckerfish, this is where I was thinking the title was going to come from. Not from somebody being smart and strategic or volunteering, but somebody, several people just stepping up and say, well, I think she looks like, I don't know her name yet, but I think she looks like she's going to be the weakest, and some people join in, and then there's your hot, I mean, there's hot girls on every tribe. So
yeah.
That could be the hot girl with a grudge who's called out as being the weakest, so I'm going to show them, and then hopefully she goes and finds the idol. You know, that sets them all straight.
Yeah. My sense of it is that, and I think I wrote about it in the column, that I think it's going to be Morgan, just in that, because all the press photos, there's all of these shots of Alexis and Morgan solo. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like they're setting that up to be the battle, and I just wonder if, like, Alexis immediately points the finger at Morgan and says she's the weakest.
Right.
Just keep the target off of herself. And in that, you know, Morgan isn't the kind of person who would take that very well. She wouldn't take it kindly, and she would hold a grudge.
And I hope he does it without any description. You know, we're going to pick a leader, and then we're going to pick the weakest. And they could be saying, well, you know what? This could turn out to be, we're setting somebody out of a challenge. So who are we setting out of the first challenge? If we do a challenge right now, you know, like I did Caramoan, we could be setting up for a challenge right now. So let's make sure we pick out somebody weak, we think is weak. And then they say, what about you? Do you mind being the weakest? And of course, who's not going to take that personally? They've come to Survivor to win. What?
It seems to me in the Braun tribe, in the TVGN preview, it seemed that like Sarah was raising her hand reluctantly and was essentially like no one was going to volunteer and no one could decide who it would be, and so she was throwing herself into the breach,
right,
and not knowing what the end result would be. It's just, you know, particularly like on the Brains tribe, it's going to happen pretty fast. I think in the Beauty, they're going to aim at the girls because they're younger, and someone's going to get pissed off. In the Braun tribe, I mean, they're all pretty strong, so there's going to be some deliberation, and no one's going to want to throw anyone under the bus.
Yeah.
All right, so let's make our picks for each tribe. Who do we think is going to be the leader for each tribe?
Trying to remember what I said. Why don't you go first while I try to remember?
I think we'll start with the Brains tribe, where you've got David and Spencer and Garrett, and then you've got the women. It doesn't matter who the women are. So I'm just kidding.
Shayna, did you hear that, Shayna?
Well, we just pointed out it's going to be a woman. Now. You got Cass and you got just Jatia and Tasha.
David. So, it's going to be David, and I think it's going to be David because I think David will actually say something.
Yeah.
I think at that point, I think Spencer is going to be calm enough to say, not me. I don't think he's going to want to step up. Seeing these older, more mature people, I think he's going to be smart enough to say, you know what, not me right now. If he's watched this show, he's going to say, you know, I don't want that medal, I don't want that badge right now. I agree. I think it's going to be David. He's a leader wherever he goes, especially in his company.
Yeah. So, how about you, Shayna? What do you think?
I'm thinking David.
Yeah, Shayna agrees.
Yeah, it's a clean sweep. It's got to be David. Especially, he's going to be wearing that jacket at that point.
Yes.
And he's just going to turn around to the rest of them and be like, let's just call it like it is. It's going to be me.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so let's go to I'm going to skip the Braun tribe because I know what that's going to be. Let's go to the Beauty tribe. And you got Bryce and Jeremiah and LJ. Then you got Alexis, Morgan, and Jeffra.
LJ.
Yeah, he's not going to want it, but he's going to take it.
Right.
Yeah. What do you think, Shayna? You confirm 4 votes?
I'm thinking Jeremiah's going to want it, but LJ will reluctantly take it. So
yeah.
I'm torn.
I think the girls will be like, oh, well, LJ, because he's going to, you know, taller and buffer and
the biggest, and yeah.
And there's horses from the other islands.
He's whispering to them.
And... yes. There you go. Jeffra and Jeremiah have an instant bond with them, but they can't explain why.
As soon as they hear each other talk, they're going to have a bond.
No, so. I mean with LJ, but they don't know. Forget it.
Oh.
Let that one go.
Instead of being oxen, they are going to be his horses that he rides to the
front. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
All right, what about the Brawn tribe, where you have Trish, Lindsay, and Sarah, and then you've got Uncle Cliff, Tony, and Wu?
Well, I think Tony, but there's a chance it could be Cliff just because he's so tall.
Yeah, I think they'll look around at each other for a moment, and then Tony will be like, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how Cliff reacts, because I think age is going to have a little to do with it, and physical strength. Obviously, it's the Brawn tribe. Even though Wu might be the most endurance strength of all of them, but I mean, I think I could see Cliff and Tony looking at each other, and if Tony's already feeling into the game and feeling strategic, he might just say, "Why don't you take it?" It might come down to who says, "Why don't you take it?" I think Cliff and Tony will look at each other. That could be what they're pointing at each other about. Why don't you take it? It doesn't matter. You and I know how strong we are. Why don't you take it or I'll take it?
Tony will end up taking it. I don't think Tony's going to go, why don't you take it? I just don't think he will.
Of those three tribes, I can see Probst has to push them along. Like, all right, guys, decide.
Exactly.
Make up your minds.
Well, if Tony's been watching for a few seasons, so, if he's picked up on that, that could be something he does right away and just gives it to somebody else.
Right.
Doesn't want that spotlight on him.
What do you think, Shayna?
I think Cliff is going to take it because he hasn't watched the show, so he has no idea that he's putting himself in an advantage or something.
Right.
Especially if Sarah and Tony have gotten together, or if there's a group of people that have bonded and not with Cliff, they're going to, lead towards him taking it. Right. Like Shayna said, if he doesn't know the game that well, doesn't want that spotlight, they can lead him into taking it.
Yeah, that's a really smart observation that those with the least amount of information are going to make those ridiculous statements / mistakes.
Right.
And they have yet to incentivize becoming a leader. They always punish someone who's the weakest.
Right.
But they don't. There's never a reason to become the leader.
And before we talk about who we think they will pick as weakest, I think CBS doing this forces the issue, because Survivor is supposed to be a social game. They all six go to camp, and they amongst themselves, the group dynamics take over, and a leader rises, or a leader smartly leads from underneath someone else, and they take that out by doing this, and I don't like this twist in the game at all. It's one of the few things that I just really don't like. And I really don't like them assigning someone a leader.
I mean, it's coming. That's a great thought. I think part of it is, as I keep harping on in my column, that they don't fully trust the game. I mean, they kind of did it in Philippines with the three tribes because they had each tribe had a leader as a returning player, as Probst said, they're just trying to instigate instant contention within the tribe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And create these divisions in moment one before they even really have a chance to talk to one another. And it's highly artificial.
Right.
Well, think about the confessionals they're going to get from that reaction than they would from six people just walking back with stuff with rice in their hands and some machetes, just walking back to camp. All right, guys, we guess we got to set up. No, we need a little animosity before you get there. We only got 39 days. And it reminds me of, we keep talking about scooping, but in his season, I remember specifically him getting called out by Probst. Are you the leader? Have you been called the leader? And he kept putting it off. He kind of let it come to him sometimes in some of the challenges, but he'd put it off at camp. He didn't want that, and he'd change from each day. But to me, that's one of CBS's or Probst's easiest prod to put into a tribe. Who's the leader of your group? Yeah. We don't have any leaders. We're a tribe. We're a team. Somebody's got to be a leader. That's right.
Remember, God.
It perhaps circumvents the problem that they're always afraid of. On the walk to camp or in that first day, just people being friendly with one another, you get a four-person alliance, and suddenly there's no drama.
Yeah. Right? I know, but it's still more fun to me to watch the group dynamics take hold.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. It's just they're so deathly afraid. Like, in one world, you had a five-person alliance put together within the first hour, and right. it wrote it out. And South Pacific did the same thing. And they just don't want that. They don't want anything to be predictable, so let's make things contentious and get them to turn on each other and not trust each other from moment one, and we'll go from there.
Okay, see, Philippines, they didn't have to do that because they threw the returnees in there. There's your instigation right there. So, I mean, that took care of that. But I kind of like this. I mean, I think it's what you said. They're not allowing them to start like possibly One World did. We're not just going to let you run this game the way you want to do it. We're gonna light a fire first, and you're going to have to put that fire out first, and then you can get to your game. And good luck with that.
Yeah,
well, particularly if you, like you pointed out before, if you get a weakest player going back to camp, feeling like they were chosen because they're genuinely in trouble, and they'll choose, looking for the idol over getting more rice. Well, and if they get their hands on it, then they can turn everything upside down.
Right. And they should choose getting the idol clue, don't you think?
Absolutely.
I mean, I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although, of course, what they're trying to set up is happens with the one person who takes rice, and then word gets around to the other tribes that they could have had more rice. Yeah. And instead, they had an idol or they got a clue and they haven't found it yet. It just it creates discord, and it's that artificial kind of chaos. But they're just trying to sow those seeds so that they have something that they can count on a few episodes in. Right. What happens when a tribe finds out they didn't get rice and they're running low?
Right. Yeah. And that's when you have producers, as they're taking the weakest players to the camp, extra rice would be really good. trying to make sure at least one of them picks the rice.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and you're going to get, those interviews where they have to answer both sides of the equation. Why would it be good to get rice? Why would it be really good to get the hidden immunity idol? Right. And just so we can, depending on what they end up choosing to do, just, creating, just planting those thoughts in their heads like, yeah, screw this tribe. They didn't get, they kicked me out here. I'm not going to get them rice. I'm going to get the idol.
Right.
Right. Okay. I wonder how they're going to present it. Are they going to say, you've got a choice since you're the first one here? You can take a tribe advantage or a personal advantage. Which do you want to help, yourself or the tribe? I mean, I just wonder how they're going to present it to them. Are they going to say, this is an idol clue, or do you want that big bag of rice over there?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, let's get to the weakest player thing.
Yeah.
I am thinking that, as far as like the selection and how it's going to affect the game, do you think... Well, I'll tell you what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that Probst is going to say, LJ, okay, you're not allowed to talk to anybody. Pick the weakest player.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to get to talk about it as a tribe. I think he's going to put it on the leader.
I think you're right. I think, though, in typical Survivor fashion, you're going to end up seeing he's going to say, you decide. And even if he says don't talk, he's going to, all three of the leaders are going to look around at the other people, and there's going to be all that body language, like, we're not talking, but that person over there. Sure.
Well, that's like in the blood versus water. We asked Colton, I was looking at boards. I was looking at whose name is being written down just so long as it wasn't mine.
Yes.
I was writing down whatever name was being written down.
Yes.
Because he saw it on the show. People were nodding and pointing.
Yeah.
But don't talk to each other.
Yeah. Well, I could just see it. So basically, Alexis looks over at Morgan. Her.
Yeah. And I think you're right in that they're going to try to establish this leader and then immediately undercut them by saying, this is your responsibility. It's your choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So get everyone angry at everybody.
So do you think it'll work? Do you think CBS is going to make it so that, do you think they're going to succeed in their goal of making contention?
I think on different tribes, you'll have different reactions. One of the other potential upsides of having people who are knowledgeable, if you have someone who can speak up when you get back to camp saying, well, look at that, it's Survivor just trying to turn us on one another, so let's not let them do that. Let's not make it allow it to happen. And I can see the brains talking that way. Mm-hmm. I could see someone like Trish or Sarah saying that on the Bronze tribe, saying, let's just not get split up over this. It will come down to, I think, to some degree, the reasoning behind who's picked to be weakest, and how they react to it. Like, let's just say, I happen to think Cass class is going to get picked as weakest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She, I think, simultaneously will and won't take it personally. Like, I mean, she kind of knew she was going to be trying to, you know, she wasn't going to be a physical threat. But it still stings a little bit. And I think she'd go into, you know, self-preservation mode and go and look for the idol over Rice. And she would simmer and be frustrated with David and might want to turn people on David.
Right. Yeah.
If Sarah ends up, you know, semi-volunteering to be it for Braun, I don't think it's going to be any big grudges, and I don't think there's going to be any big discord. No.
Janice makes a good point in the YouTube comments. She says, a true fan should know that the weakest person to camp early will get an option to get the idol.
Yeah, guaranteed. That's why I'd love to see them game it and say, you know what, whoever's going back there, find the idol.
And we probably won't see it, but I would love to see the teams that don't go first. If he goes to Beauty and says, LJ, if he's the leader, you need to pick. I'd like to see the other teams, how fast their heads turn, and if somebody says, send me, or if somebody says, I'll be it. You know, like you said, like Trish or Sarah says, you know what, let's don't worry about this, I'll do it. I we're not leaving the game. We've already been told we're not leaving the game. We're just going in a different route to the camp, I'll be it. I'd like to see the second and third tribe, see how fast they react. And if they immediately bond, because what a great bonding tool that could be for these tribes, if they immediately look at each other and say, somebody takes the fall. I'll be called the weakest player. Send me, that's fine.
And I may have written about that in, you know, particularly with the Braun tribe. I think there's a moment in that TVGN thing where it looks like it's coming down to between Sarah and Lindsay. And mm-hmm. I think Sarah throws herself on that sword thinking it's not going to be as bad as we're thinking it's going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take one for Lindsay.
Right.
Because Lindsay's going to end up, and we see some later shots of them bonding pretty tightly. I think it paid off.
Yeah.
All right, so if we're picking who we think is going to be the weak ones, I think we all agreed Morgan was going to be picked for Beauty.
That's my pick.
Shayna, what about you?
Mine's Morgan.
Yes. Okay.
I feel like American Idol here. You're going to Hollywood. what about, and then we just said Braun. I kind of agree. I don't see anyone on there that's the weakest. I kind of agree that it's going to be. I hope it is. I hope it is a volunteering thing, and it is Sarah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then it'll be Cass because she's older.
Yeah, and just so you know, I ran through these picks when I was going through my column with my wife, and not only did she give me grief about all of the mean things I said about things that annoyed me, I also got, she's like, you realize you picked a man for the leader and a woman for the weakest on every tribe.
Yes.
And that's what makes me an expert on Survivor.
Well, it's that knee-jerk reaction. You know that's how they're going to be thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
At least that's how I tried to justify it and rationalize it.
So we've got our so-called leaders. Yep. We know the three people that are being shipped. I think it's by helicopter. I thought he said they're being taken by helicopter.
Yes, he did. They get to
go to their camps. So now you know the five that are walking back for each tribe. So just real quick, day one, first opportunity, here's my spontaneous question. Which person are you trying to walk next to start that alignment conversation? Of the people that are left heading to their camps.
That's a fantastic question. So one person from each tribe, you're asking?
At least one,
David,
I remember in One World, when the girls were walking, I remember Kat saying right away, she named off five names, just right off, and said, this is the cool girls.
Click.
You know, this is the alliance. I'm like, that's what you got to do. You find that alliance, the numbers alliance quick, and then, of course, the guys didn't have the numbers alliance. They didn't have the math. But anyway, the girls had the numbers alliance, and they had it quick, and I was impressed, and that was the one that rode to the end.
Yeah, what was interesting about that one is that numbers rule in that they wanted to get rid of Kat a few times before they finally blindsided her, because you make that knee-jerk reaction, and you end up having people in your alliance you really don't want there.
Yeah.
You contemplate swapping people out, but then you just can't do it. It's like, we've got our solid numbers. Let's just go with it.
First day decisions, right?
Yeah. It's a really good question. And quickly, I would say, just body language-wise and just getting a sense of things, I probably would seek out someone like Tasha in the Brains, just because she seems likable and trustworthy on a tribe where they're being, you know, they're brains. They're there to strategize. And so I want someone who I think I can trust.
Mm-hmm.
In Braun, I don't know. I tend to like people like Lindsay a lot. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I don't know what Dwayne's problem is, but I do too. Go ahead.
Hey, I didn't say I didn't like Lindsay. I just know that in our Team David and Team Dwayne picks, I wanted Jeffra and you wanted Lindsay, and it ended up that way.
You want to let me answer that question now, because you asked me on Twitter about my fixation with Lindsay, and I'll tell you, who does Lindsay remind you of? Ask all three of you. Who does Lindsay remind you of from previous Survivor seasons?
Are you talking about Matt the Beard? Poor Lindsay.
No, the point is, none of you are coming up with quick names, and yeah. I think it's because Lindsay is a unique person for Survivor. I think she's articulate. I think she's mature. She's already got a child. She's got life. That's life experience bonus points right there. She knows how to deal with situations, and she's a part-time bartender. She's a hairstylist. She deals with a lot of different people, making people happy. I just think she's a unique person that's got different skill sets that could do well in this game socially. She doesn't have to be the strongest, doesn't have to be the fastest or the smartest, but to me, the social game of the Survivor is really important, and I think she meets a lot of those qualities. I think she's
David, a unique person. Stop she it. Moons done, people at happening. Camp. She moons people at camp.
And she made them laugh. And they got over finishing second place. Big deal. Beauty Tribe won. They finished second. She moved them, made them happy.
She moved, made them happy. Okay.
Yeah. Tribe morale. Well,
I do think, though, that the flashing thing, I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't. It attracts me to her as a potential alliance mate, not for the obvious reason.
if I align with you, would you do that again?
Yeah. Would Could you be our morning handshake? Final tribal council, please?
Yeah.
Because I think that screams to me she is someone that is comfortable in her own skin,
right?
But is likely not going to win. That she is going to do things like that. People aren't going to take her that seriously, it's just she's got the life experience. She's got a kid, but I see her as somebody. It's like you can trust, you can have fun with, but in the end, you can outmaneuver and make a better argument than they can.
She'll be a good sergeant at arms. She'll be a good right-hand person.
That just struck me. There's a perfect example of me saying 5,000 words and him summing it up in 5. That was awesome. Sergeant at arms, perfect.
See, for the Braun tribe, see, I would stay away from Cliff. He kind of stands out.
Yep.
And I would probably stay away from Trish because she's the oldest woman and she could be picked off. I'd probably lean towards Lindsay or even Wu. For that matter, maybe even Tony. It depends. It depends on what I saw in the leader pick. How? Because I think if the brains are last and they do it by committee, then I would go towards David if he's the leader. If we picked him to be our leader as a group, then I could see myself leaning towards David or Tasha. I really like Tasha too, but definitely I would stay away from Spencer. I hate to say. And the other ones I've worked towards, I mean, even Garrett, you have to think that Garrett's going to stay a while, especially for his brawn. He's going to be around for the brain tribe. But for the I agree that Lindsay and probably Wu would be my first two picks, and then Tony for the Braun tribe.
Yep. Yeah. I'm with you. What about Beauty?
Take your pick, dude. I mean, who do you want to walk next to?
I'm gonna walk next to Alexis.
Once again,
talk to LJ.
There you go. Once again, I'm looking for body language, and I agree with Dwayne that I know he jokes about it, but I think Jeffra and Jeremiah are gonna immediately click. And there's going to be they probably don't realize they're making an alliance, but they will be making an alliance. And if I see two people out of the six, and I could be the immediate third, and all I got to do is find a fourth, I might just start walking in their direction and start, hey, how's it going? Aren't you glad you're here? And look for a twosome. You know, if they seem to be friends and hitting it off right away, then you know they're going to keep talking during the week. So I would think those two and probably LJ, because I think LJ is going to be a consensus. I don't think it's going to be a dictatorship. I think he's going to be very likable. So I would probably think one of those three I'd probably get close to.
Yeah, I think you're right in that the one thing that Rob Cesternino always talked about was you cannot underestimate the power of the campfire conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
People who are friendly, the people who have some commonality, it gets you through all the hours you never see on the show.
Right.
And if someone's rubbing you the wrong way, that's part of the reason why they go home. Some of the inexplicable votes we've seen over the history of the show, it really comes down to, guy's just a jerk. We don't like talking to him around the campfire.
Right. Yeah.
And obviously Rob rode that pretty hard because he was a fun guy to talk to. But I'm going to throw a curveball at you when it comes to the country club, the people on Beauty. Thank you, Kathy Long Trantham, for coming up with that name. But the
there's the first name drop.
Yeah, I'm not going to do too much of it, but we made a promise. But I'm seeing in the press photos and some of the footage that because everyone is saying Jeremiah Jeffra. I've been saying that, beating that drum too. But it seems, oddly enough, that Jeffra is spending time around LJ and Alexis is the one who's working Jeremiah, which surprised me. I didn't peg it that way, but that's more what I'm seeing now. So I'm wondering,
I think that's the editors reading our columns and listening to our podcast and saying, we can't put them together in the photos. We can't make it that obvious that they're right.
Clearly, we are shaping the destiny of all on the show.
Well, this is what happened. Jeremiah and Jeffra hooked up, not in the literal sense, but, you know, they hooked up friendliness. And Jeffra said, okay, I'll go with LJ, you go with Alexis, and we'll have our four. That's what happened.
Yeah, I do think that that is a foursome that's going to come together, and you know you're going to see Bryce is on the outside. You know, if they lose, he's going to be the casualty of convenience. Right. And but he's another example of somebody who, if they win out and then get to a swap, he could hide for a while and stick around.
Right.
Absolutely.
Brooks has said that there are some people that he pegged as not being very good this season who actually make it a lot deeper than he thought.
And see, that could work for Morgan if she's picked as the weakest and goes back and finds the idol.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be her ticket to make it to the merge, you know, if she gets that far.
She'd have a place to hide the idol, too.
Probably two camp idols and the super-powered one.
Yes.
Can we talk about that now? Are we ready to talk about that idol?
Sure.
Tyler Perry idol.
Okay, was that a probe saying, hey, a famous person watched a Survivor, so you should be watching it too?
Yeah.
I got into a conversation about this where ever since, perhaps it began with Redemption Island, but he now has this habit, Probst does, of sort of laying the blame for various twists or attributing it to other people. And if it goes well, he'll be happy to take the praise. But if it goes poorly, it's like, oh, yeah, this brains, bronze, beauty thing, that was all Lynn Spillman. And, oh, yeah, bringing back the superpowered idol that we know that that Yule had before, but we're going to pretend that didn't happen. So I'm going to blame it on Tyler Perry. He texted me.
Yeah.
And if it ends up being, creating for some bland strategy, it's not Probst's fault. Even though he okays all this stuff.
Yeah.
Is there any possible scenario where the all-powerful idol helps the game?
I mean, there is a way where it can happen. If you picture, it's only post-merge, so if you get to post-merge and you've got brains, or you've got Brawn and Beauty teaming up to take out the remaining brains, and Garrett gets his hands on it, the thing is, Yule played it perfectly in that you use it as an instrument of fear.
Exactly.
Which you go to the weakest members of the other alliances and say, hey, come with me. You're at the bottom of your alliance. I've got this thing. It's going to take you two moves to get me out, and one of you is going to go down with my vote when I do it. Mm-hmm. So you could see someone going into the merge in a minority, someone who's normally targeted at that spot, and leverages it into a deep run. It's the kind of thing, this is me being a conspiracy theorist, as some people have said, it's my tinfoil buff that I put on at this point. It's the kind of thing, let's test it out here, see if people are cool with it, so that when we have Survivor Legends next season, in season 30, and not knowing what season 29 will be, but if you bring someone like Malcolm back, or Ozzy back, someone who is going to be targeted immediately post-merge if he gets it that far, get this to fall in their hands, and they can get it all the way down to the final four.
Right. Oh, they've never done that. They would never have a cameraman walk backwards through a trail to lead Malcolm to an idol. That could never happen. But, I forgot that it was also in the season before Yule and Terry Dietz had it, but he never had to use it because he won every challenge.
Yeah.
So he had double immunity throughout the whole season.
Yeah.
But I liked when I was going back over to Yule, I wanted to see more detail. He didn't really make it public till the auction, which I think was around episode 12 in that season. He told some of his alliance mates, but he told everybody at the auction.
Yeah.
But he really used it, like you said. He used it at that point, and then he used it on Pinner and really left Pinner with no choice. Pinner's like, okay, you've got the idol that you can't lose, and you've got the guy Ozzy who doesn't lose. So why not go with two automatic votes that would go against me? So, I mean, yes, he did use it well. I just hate that it's for some people it sits as an asterisk on his win. Yeah, that he had that idol the whole time.
Because it's too much power.
Yeah, yeah. But I think you would have been just as good, if not better, if he didn't have it. I think he could have still done real well in convincing people.
Yeah, no, I don't like it diminishing Yule at all, because I think he's a fantastic player, no doubt. Yeah. But you have to sort of have that asterisk there, in that it's like, if only we had known what he would have done. Another good example of that is just in Blood vs. Water, Tyson's signature move being willing to draw rocks. If Redemption Island's not there, does he do that?
Right.
Right.
Because that gave him the confidence to say, well, if I draw the wrong one, I go to Redemption, I think I can beat those people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you don't have that safety net, you know, if Yule doesn't have that idol, does he have to scramble a little bit?
Yeah.
Does he have his back against the wall in a way he never experienced? And this is actually a conversation I had with Colton yesterday, that there are the three types of... There's playing from ahead when you're in a majority alliance the entire way. Kim Spradlin played it perfectly. We never got to see her when the numbers were really equal, and we never got to see her down in numbers. Oddly enough, and I'm probably going to say something that is antithetical to all things that are holy about Survivor, but... one of the best players when they are down in numbers, Russell. In Samoa, he was down huge, and he managed to manipulate and work his way. He played best when he was down. And in those three phases, you know, being ahead, middle, down, Yule, we never got to see him have to scramble.
Right.
Because of that idol, and I would have loved to see it, because I think he could be someone who's good in all three phases, but we'll never know.
Yeah, two more that did that was Chris Daughtry did it. That's one of my most favorite comeback seasons of all time. The guy that was almost left day one or day three because of that first challenge, and he took the whole thing. And then I thought Denise played from the underdog stake the whole time she was in it.
Yeah.
I mean, she was at every tribal council. I mean, she could have been gone every time, and I thought that was really pretty awesome that she did that.
Yeah. No, you just named two seasons that I adore. Vanuatu is such a great rewatch if anyone's listening to this. And hasn't rewatched it, go back and look at how that thing played out, how and why.
Okay, this is the episode Chris leaves. Okay, this is the episode Chris leaves.
Yeah.
He never goes.
And he's just so amazing with it. You know, just he gives great confessionals, and you know, he's at the top of the list of why haven't they brought him back.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, here's pop quiz for you. You're Garrett, Dwayne. You and I wish we were Garrett, but anyway. We're Garrett, we're down in numbers, we're at the merge, and we stumble across the Tyler Perry idol. Do you show it, or do you keep it hidden?
Is this a question for me?
For anybody, for Shayna, for Dwayne, for anybody.
Okay. I am, if I have anybody in my alliance at that point, I'm showing it to them.
Yeah.
Because I think... Well, this is one of the things I wrote about Garrett. He wants to do all of his strategic thinking alone,
right?
Which I think is ill-advised. I think you want to have that other person who can go have conversations you're not having, and then if they read it as a situation where, okay, this is somebody who, if we use this idol, we can leverage this person, you need to sort of double your chances of having those conversations. But I think you then, you know, if you're down in numbers, you absolutely start, you walk through everybody on, you know, whatever alliances are out there, say, find out who's at the bottom, and you draw them in. I mean, you can do that with a normal idol. I mean, Colton did it in One World. He went from being with Quinlan and others to switching over to the Misfits because he had an idol. And he said, follow the idol. If you're not going to follow me, follow the idol. And this thing is the superpowered one. People will swirl around it because everyone is afraid of getting that boomerang vote.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, Dwayne, we talked about it last time, and you talked about showing it like Yule did. But like I was saying, Yule showed it late to me. He showed it at the auction. So to me, if I found it at the merge, I wouldn't be showing it for at least a while, like you said, until I can work into some alliance or find someone I can trust. Because the first person you show it to, if you think you've got them, they'll go right back to their. They could go right back to their alliance.
Yeah, but see,
and then you're the first vote. They're going to vote you first just to flush the idol, and then get rid of somebody else from another alliance.
Well, but you got to play this idol differently than you play a normal idol. I think if you show this idol, no one's going to vote for you.
I think if you show it too early, everyone's going to vote for you just to get rid of it and then pick some sucker to go out second. You know, who was it that said last season, well, if they don't go, that means I go, you know?
Yeah.
Or was it the season before?
Yeah.
Sure. I don't know. I'm leaning more towards hide it, and I like Andy's thought of start digging into other alliances. Got to find a weak spot, and you got to make somebody a deal. You got to make them that deal they can't you know, a deal offer you can't refuse. I've got that get out of jail idol, and we need to start a new run because in fact, I would go to the smaller alliance, the less in number alliance, and then blindside one of the big alliance. You know, and if it takes out idol, it takes out idol, but you got to find your way into something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am kind of curious to see. It's like whoever finds it, I mean, usually you have two major alliances once you hit the merge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how is somebody in one of those major alliances going to play having this thing? Do you just, you know, at that point, if you've got the numbers majority, it just helps protect you. If you're down one or two, you can pick off the bottom members of the other group and bring them over to you. But it tends to be, if played well, I mean, it's an idol that doesn't get used. It just shapes everything around it. That's why it's too powerful.
Right.
Yeah, it got used in neither season with Terry and Yule.
Yeah.
What else, David?
Did you have any questions that you wanted to change your answers to? I can jot them off a couple.
I wrote down a couple of things. Okay. I said question number two, leaving in episode one, I changed it to Cass and Morgan.
Okay.
I think I had Cass and Tony, maybe.
Don't remember. David has all that stuff written down.
Yeah. All I see is this is a bit of a trick question.
David is a scribe.
So, yeah, he's got Tony and Cass.
Yeah, so I'm changing that to Cass and Morgan.
Okay.
But I think Cass is going to go first. Number three, I think you said it was the first person from each tribe, and I had said with Beauty none, but now it's Cass, Tony, and Morgan.
Cass, Tony, and Morgan, okay. I'm keeping mine at none. I'm going for the Tan Ding slide. That somebody's going to make it all the way to the merge without losing somebody.
Well, I mean, or to the swap. I mean, the swap will be four people in. And you may very well be right. That was my first inclination as well until I saw the title of the episode. But like you said, it could be they're just baiting us to think.
I think they got lucky with Philippines that Malcolm and Denise made it as far as they did. That was it. Was just a great dramatic part of the story that they kept going and they made it through the whole Calabal tribe. But I don't think they'd want to take that chance again.
No. And number nine.
Mm-hmm. Final three.
Maybe the final three, because when you guys did your reader feedback, you both reacted like, we got to talk about this idiot Baker dude picking Morgan to be in the final three.
Yeah, because now you got her going early.
Yeah, no, I swapped her for Alexis. I mean, I've been saying since the beginning that there's always that player who's sort of goes sheep deep. You know, the one who follows everybody and is a part of an alliance that gets to the end. And it's clear that Alexis is winning the flirting game, and Morgan seems to be losing it. Like, there's a few shots of camp life, and Morgan's on the fringes, and Alexis is right there in the middle with the boys, smiling big, and they're staring at her booty shorts, which look like the most uncomfortable things in the world.
You don't wear those?
She brought shorts like Tony.
I'm wearing them right now.
Yeah. David bought me a pair for Christmas.
Yeah,
no, nice. Not really.
See, that's funny. We had two of the same three. I had Sarah and LJ.
Like Shane is being awfully quiet right now.
But I've got Lindsay as my – Lindsay's going to be my Jervis for this season. She's going to go with Sarah, and I think she could sit there and come out thinking, you know what, I did everything that Sarah did. And then Sarah could make an argument to some of the jurors that she was the one that actually had the ideas. And then Sarah could say, and if you don't vote for me, you see these MMA gloves? I'll find you right after the season's over.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that until the videos. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Now that there's some toughness there that I respond to well. But I'm with you. I had Lindsay, I think I put her fourth in my revised lineup because I see her and Sarah going deep together. Yeah. But maybe getting cut late because nobody wants the single young mom story going in front of the jury. But
yeah.
Oh, so she could be a CRS/Jervis. There you go.
Yep. Hey, did I hear you drop Colton's name? Did you say you had talked to Colton?
Well, we traded messages. Are you going to bring him in here now? No.
I haven't contacted him. Although I could invite him and see if he's on. But I know you don't have the greatest of love for him as a player for sure. So, who contacted whom?
Yeah, I'm not sure sort of how how and why it happened yesterday, but he just reached out and said that I hope you know that I'm not as bad as I appear on TV. Oh, and by the way, your son is totally cute.
Yeah.
Like, he saw some pictures of my son on Facebook. So
yeah.
And we had a nice conversation, and you know, he's aware that I haven't been kind to him in my column at all.
No.
And because I like you guys, I don't have a lot of respect when people quit the game.
Right.
It especially stings people who want to play the game.
Yeah. Right.
But you know, I had a conversation with Quinlan at the finale, and he was, you know, very forthright and very adamant about Colton being a really good guy who just doesn't have as much life experience as one might be able, need to borrow on when right. you're out there.
Right.
That he's really a good guy. So
yeah.
I take him at his word, and it was a nice conversation.
Well, I got to tell you what, he was a great guest on our show. We had a blast talking to him. And so... He's fun.
He noticed
to talk
what he's talking about. I mean, he got on the show because he knows the show so well.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, we're hoping he and Caleb will come join us one Sunday night this season.
Nice.
Do a little comment show. I had a question and I've lost it. So talk amongst yourselves.
Oh, really? Shayna, do you have a question for our guest, Andy?
I do. I like
no question is taboo.
I like the thing wrote about
Andy.
Spencer, about him not playing for this season for Survivor Cagayan, but he's playing to be on Heroes vs. Villains 2, and that is something that bothers me about him too, because I feel like he's going to go into this trying to own the show, not the game, but the show. I mean, he knows the tricks and exactly what to say to get the most confessionals. And being a fan of the show, you can kind of tell when they try to do that now. Don't you think, or am I?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it can be very frustrating. I mean, the best of players who are very self-aware and really want to get a whole ton of confessionals know how to play the producers and say the right things and
right.
sort of own the camera. But my frustration is yours in that some people come on playing not for the first time but the second time.
Right.
And especially when it becomes very clear that they're down in numbers that they're not long for the game, that they try to make it as big as they can so that they can become the villain, become the character that people are going to want to see on again, that they can count on to create chaos. As crazy as it was, there was a certain amount of calculation in what Brandon did when he melted down. He was trying to be memorable so
right.
that maybe, just maybe, he could get on again, because everything had turned sour on him. I mean, it was obviously peppered with all kinds of other issues, but
yeah.
that had to be part of his thinking. And someone like Spencer is going to try to say this over-the-top stuff, and he's already doing it.
Right.
And, maybe he'll just be a confessional superstar and, be able to tone it down in camp. But my guess is that he is quickly going to, start... chafing his tribe mates and playing that up and then saying horrible things in confessionals because he wants to come back.
Yeah. I almost feel like Spencer in this group of people is out of his element.
Mm.
He's so used to being the one that's looking down on others, and here he's going to be looking up to these people. You know, they are older than him. They're more mature than he is. And I don't think he's going to do very well in that environment.
He's always been in a situation where he impresses people when he tells them what he does.
Right.
And he's probably not going to impress a nuclear engineer.
No.
My sense of Spencer, if the best way he could play this game is to look around, realize he's on with a bunch of brains, realize that these aren't people that he's going to be able to trust and or manipulate all that well.
Right.
And say, okay, I'm going to work within what I've got here so that I can get to a swap, and then I will have pieces I can play with.
Right.
I will have brawns that I can direct where I want them to. I will have beauties that I can direct strategically. And maybe find someone on the brains tribe like Garrett that you can team up with and say, okay, let's use these people as pawns once we get out of this doomed brains tribe.
Right.
But I don't know that he has that kind of patience.
No, because he's young.
Yeah.
He's young.
He's going to be, you know, the chess master Colton, perhaps.
Yes.
He looks like he ate a sour pickle or something. Does it? I mean, when I was watching the preview, he just had that. Maybe the sun was in his eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, but he has that expression when he's saying things to the camera, like, you know, I'm coming into this game so that, you know, I can just manipulate idiots, and you've provided me with many an idiot.
Right. That's exactly how he comes across.
He does have that look that I'm going to come in here like a ball of fire because I'm probably not going to be here very long, but you're going to remember me, and you're going to want to see me play again.
Well, I don't think he thinks he's not going to be there very long. Not pre-game interviews.
Yeah.
But once the game starts, he might feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly one of the very fascinating things, and I think this is something that you said, David, that those first few episodes are so important for, you know, everyone comes in with this grand fever dream fantasy of what the game is going to, the magic carpet ride that awaits them all the way to the end.
Yeah.
And when they hit those first few bumps early on and realize it's not going to be the picture they have in their head or any of the pictures they had in their head, and they are hungrier than they thought they were going to be, and it's hot, and they're sunburned, and they're tired, and people are telling them what to do, and they're paranoid all the time, that how do they react then? How do they adjust?
Mm-hmm,
and
he's
got a fantasy in his head what he's going to do. How does he react when the fantasy, the reality is so much different.
Yeah.
And that's where the life experience stuff comes in, where it's like, you know, by the time we reach our age, gentlemen, we reach this point where it's like, yeah, not a lot goes exactly how we wanted it to, and you got to roll with those punches.
Yeah, I remember when Scooping came back from Philippines, this was before we got to meet him, and he said in his preseason interview that Survivor changes day to day, and if you don't change with it, it's going to be a bumpy ride or something to that effect.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to play the plan on Monday. You're not going to be that you had on Sunday. You know,
right.
You're going to have to change with the day and roll. And he was. And he was fortunate enough to be on a winning tribe because, like I said, he would have lost Lisa probably day three if they had lost that challenge.
Yeah.
So he rolled with it. He dealt with people. You know, people had different comments about him. But you know what? He was at the end and you weren't. So that's him rolling with the road.
I mean, I know part of my impression of him and that season is tweaked by having gotten to know him a little bit. But mm-hmm. It bothers me that he didn't get more respect in that season just because he was at the heart of most of the major decisions. It really came down to what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I love Denise to death. She is fantastic as a human being as well as a winner. I got to, you know, it was really kind of bizarre. I was backstage at the finale, and she came around the corner, and she's still holding the $1 million check in her hand.
Yeah.
And I got to chat with her for a little
bit. So you want me to hold that for you?
Yeah, exactly. Here's the pen. To Andy Baker. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then I got to sit down with her the next day. I just happened to bump into her in the cast hotel and sat down for a half an hour conversation. And within that time, it's like, I now know how you won. She's just charismatic, personable, connected with everybody. She's a therapist, and it comes through. Like, she genuinely wants to connect with you.
Right.
And so she's a great winner, beautiful winner. But, you know, Scroopin called a lot of shots that season.
Yeah.
And, you know, for him to be sort of roundly criticized afterwards for just being a goofball who hurts himself throughout the entire game, it's like, you're missing a lot of what he was up to.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Denise in the beginning, because she was a unique person, and she was a therapist, and that drew me to her, but I never pegged her as a winner. For some reason, I just didn't see her getting there, so I was impressed.
Yeah. All right, David, what's next, buddy?
The only thing I was going to say that I forgot a minute ago was the question about somebody quitting. I mean, I don't really want to pick somebody to quit, or I don't hope anybody quits, but I think I could see one or two people leaving because they just physically can't do it, doing a Reichenbach or whatever you want to call it, you know, just being unable to continue.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, Cliff could be one of those people. And I don't know if it's because of his age or his knees or just, like Shanna said, being somebody caught out of their element, completely unaware of what they're stepping into.
Yeah.
That to me would be the only reason somebody would quit the season. The rest of them just look too happy to be there and just too wanting to play.
Yeah. I mean, Cliff, to me, I don't think he really has any chance to win. Could he stumble into a post-merge finish? Maybe. But when you combine, you know, the size and the physical suffering, it was interesting talking to people like Quinlan and some of the other people who were on One World talking about how what's his name? The guy who said he mowed lawns but was actually a male model. What's his name? Jay Byers. There we go. Really nice guy. But he talked about buffing up before the show because, you know, doing the modeling thing. And he said it was the worst thing he could have done because he just was hungrier than everybody else because he'd been powering through calories leading to the show. And someone like Cliff, you know, the fact that he's going to be eating 500 calories a day is a lot different for him than, you know, for, you know, Trish or Sarah.
Who already ate 500 calories.
He's going to suffer. And, you know, the dude made $62 million in his life. And as Sesternino always points out, there's this gut check. Wealthy people tend to check out at some point in the game thinking, why am I doing this to myself? I have $1 million at home. Right. It's not going to change my life. And that's going to go through Cliff's head. Like, why am I out here? I don't think I can win this game. It's just, I mean, when you get to that point, and it's one of the things I've thought through because I so desperately want to play, how would I feel and how would I react? What would I do if I'm pretty certain there's no chance left for me to win?
Right.
Or if I'm backed into a corner and it's like the numbers are against me, what do I do? I know I try to make moves or whatever, but that's not Cliff. He doesn't know the game.
Right.
And I don't think he has those chops.
He could go off on Tony and urinate in the rice and, you know, just do some of that stuff once he finds himself in that corner. But
I don't think he's...
Now, what do you think about Tony putting on 15 pounds before going on the show? I mean, you see how cut he is, but I think he stated that he put on 15 pounds before he went out there. How do you think that's going to fare on him?
He's going to be agitated just like everybody who's hungry. When you're hungry, you get moody, and it's a different degree of hungry. Again, I know I keep dropping his name, but one of the cool things talking to Quinlan at the finale was I was telling him, well, one of the coolest things I remembered from some of the inside scenes was this belt. And then he was very mindlessly drilling a new hole in his belt because it was like day 7, and he was talking about we're eating 500 calories a day, and he's already lost all this weight. And he looked horrible and was monotone. And when I told him about that, he was like, he pulled his belt off, and he's like, this is the belt. Here's the hole. And it's a big distance away from the last hole. They lose so much weight so fast. And their body goes into shock to some degree. And it makes everyone angry and edgy and really attitudinal with one another. And so that's my worry with Tony when, you know, it's like you agitate a cop. What's a cop going to do? Is he going to be like, I'm going to go off by myself for a little while, go for a little swim, and I'll come back okay? No, he's going to get in somebody's face.
Probably. Right. My wife said I was so agitated on the Atkins diet. I can't imagine what I would be like on the Survivor diet.
Exactly. I mean, there's two things if I were to ever to play that I wonder. It's, you know, the food agitation and the fact that you want to stay on top of everything. And so you're already not sleeping well.
The stress.
The paranoia and the lack of sleep because you just want to be on top of every conversation at all times.
Yeah. I'd want to be in bed last or asleep last and awake first.
Yep.
And then I'd be afraid of what happened while I was asleep.
Totally. Totally. But you can't do that for 39 days without, you know, losing a little bit of sanity.
Right.
Now, one other thing I want to talk about was why I liked Cass in the beginning, and I thought her videos were real funny, you know, the way she put herself down and stuff. She was very likable. She, to me, is like Rupert in Pearl Island. And what I think drew everybody to Rupert, made him so popular, was that he was not a model, not in any shape or form. He was not an athlete. He was not the perfect person. He was this blunt, gruff, I'll do it type person. He was willing to do this. He was willing to throw himself in every challenge. And that's the everyday people that I want to pull for in Survivor. And to me, Cash reminded me of that. And I'm not insulting her. She'll laugh when she's, you know, she doesn't meet the model like, you know, Alexis or Morgan or some of these people. And she's not the, you know, she's a mom, She's just an everyday person, and I think that's the kind of people most Survivor fans are drawn to for the sense they want to pull for. They might not pick her to win, but they might pull for her just like they pulled for Rupert. Rupert was a, you know, a maniac with fans that first season. He had so many fans, and I think it's because he wasn't like the cookie-cutter mold Survivor likes to cast. He was right. Different, well, and I think that's what made him so popular.
Yeah, and I think early Survivor is full of more people like that. I mean, you mentioned Vanuatu. It's a perfect example. That final three, Twyla, Scout, and Chris. and I mean, you couldn't find a more, you know, sort of, okay, let's just get a group of interesting people that don't have to be models and don't have to be...
let's walk on a bus in New York and pick off three people.
Yeah.
or anywhere. Yeah.
I just read an article today about... on a poker website about Garrett, and he was recruited, and it was, you know, there are certain places you go to in Santa Monica or Marina Del Rey, and that's where the casting office is, where the people hang out, and, you know, he was noticed there, and it went from there. I mean, I think he's a great choice in the end. I'm fascinated to see how he does, but it's just, you know, you look at him, it's like, okay, you're not your... you know, average, you know, applicant to the show. And, right. And I missed that. I mean, Rupert was an over-the-top everyman. You know, he I feel bad. I haven't been very kind to Rupert. I loved him in his first season, just like everybody else, too. Because yep. He was that person. He's gotten worse every single time he's played because he's played the same way every single time and everybody right. Knows what to do with him.
Yep.
And it makes me sad because if you go back to the game, eventually you learn it. I mean, Coach got to the end. To the end.
As much different leader, player the last time, yeah.
Yeah, he was so bad his first time. And the second time he figured some stuff out. Third time he almost wins. I mean, Tyson finally straightened out and realized that he needed to be a little more serious. And he wins.
Right.
But Rupert's the one guy who's come back multiple times and just gotten worse every time.
Literally. Every time, worse. Yep.
First day Shana, worse, yeah.
Shana, do you have any other any more questions that you had for Andy?
Yeah, Janice wants you guys to talk about Survivor token chains. That's the only other season, I think, where they did the entrance like they're doing it now, except it was two tribes in that season where they select, they have people vote for the weakest link, and they get flown back in helicopter, and they get to choose, do you want to dig for the idol or build the shelter? And what did you like that twist back then? Or,
I always like it when, I mean, I probably am contradicting myself for stuff that I've written before, but I do like that they're willing to take chances because they do have to freshen up the, you know, I don't want to say twists, but try some things to shake things up a little bit because you don't want the game to be predictable. You can't have a begonging every season and have people continue to tune in. I found it interesting, and my memory of it is somewhat fuzzy, but I just seem to recall it was Sierra, the one that Tyson couldn't stand, you know, going back to camp and just being miserable and being sick and having accomplished nothing by the time the rest of the tribe came there, and it just sets you up in a bad spot. I can't remember who it was on the other side, but, I mean, the efforts to create discord and to create, you know, just to set people in opposition to one another so you have intercamp drama from the get-go. I understand it, but I don't know if it, you know, gave what they were hoping for. All I remember is really not liking Sierra by the end of episode one.
Sandy was the other one, and she chose to look for the idol and not build a shelter. And and Sierra supposedly built the whole shelter by herself, but I just don't think she did. I think she had some behind-the-scenes help. I just didn't believe she built that whole shelter by herself.
Cameraman Bob helped her?
Well, it's a slippery slope, you know, and I probably could talk for hours about the various conspiracy theories that swirl around Survivor, some of which I believe, some of which I don't. There's always been production help, always has been, always will be.
Right.
And really, you know, some of the players know how to do that and how to work it. Wouldn't surprise me.
Go ahead. What do you think about the season one conspiracy that Mark Burnett actually goes out on the island and talks to them about not voting off the old guy and stuff?
Rudy.
Yeah.
You don't mind me offering a plug for another podcast, Dom and Colin have a really good interview with Hatch, and they talk about that very, very question.
Okay.
Hatch basically said, I'm not going to talk about what I feel, but I will share what I know. But what it ultimately came down to was there heavy lobbying by the producers for them to save Rudy and get Stacey Stillman out? Yes. In all likelihood, yeah, that's why Stacey Stillman hasn't talked about it ever since, that there was some sort of financial agreement between her and CBS. What Hatch said is that he was lobbying very hard for Rudy to stay because they were in an alliance together. And he was pretty powerful at that point. But that wasn't all that happened, that there was some manipulation because they wanted Rudy to stick around.
So which podcast is that?
Dom and Colin.
Dom and Colin. And just go look for the Richard Hatch interview.
Yeah. It's one of their last two or three that they've done.
Okay.
And it's like 2 to 3 hours of amazing insight into season one. And don't miss it if you care to know about some of the history of the show.
Now, I don't mind the day one twist so much, but instead of trying to cause tension or throw them into a situation, I'd rather them just see them, throw them into a challenge. You know, you're here, welcome to Survivor, just like they did in Karamoan, but not returnees against newbies, because the returnees immediately had an advantage.
Yeah.
I mean, don't even get me started on fans versus favorites. I could stand never to see one of those again. But just throw them into a challenge, because the season where they let them live for 3 days, and then they made them pick teams, and the two that didn't get picked were sent home. That broke my heart. I wanted to cry for those people. That was horrible.
It was.
I hated that one. But just throw them into a challenge. Make them work. I love these first challenges where it's all team, carrying the stretcher with all the supplies on it through the mud, carrying the cannon. Well, one season they brought a cannon through the mud and through the forest, but they had to do it as a team. Don't break them up in the legs. Make them do it as a team. Throw them right in the fire right away. But, I mean, sending two people back or three people back because they're picked as the weakest, that just doesn't do anything for me. I guess they're trying to give them a sense of giving them an advantage by letting them look for the idol. But I'd rather see them just throw them into a challenge.
Well, here's another twist that I've heard about in the past that to throw into that. What if you have that kind of challenge, but you say for each tribe, there's an idol over there, you know, hidden in the sand over there. You can, you know, either help your tribe do this thing, or if you start falling behind, you can bail at any point, and if you find the idol before the competition is over, it's yours.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So and then, if your tribe loses, you're going immediately to tribal council.
Yeah.
Right there. Day one.
Yep. Create some drama right there.
And then that's when Cliff goes, what's an idol? I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding, Uncle Cliff.
Cliff looks over at Tony and goes, what's he talking about?
Yeah, it's the kind of thing, like, they forgot to give him a set of DVDs of a season that actually had an idol in it. So
yes.
They gave him Big Brother CDs.
Yes.
Why aren't we in this house? Where's that house we're supposed to be in?
Where's the basketball court? Hey, Shayna, anything else on the YouTube comments that we want to talk about?
Yes. Janice said she has funny things about Cliff. Last week she did, and here too. She says Cliff's agent is going to get fired for getting him this gig, but that's what we...
Was it the same agent who got him the gig in North Korea?
Yeah,
Rodman.
Right, and that's what I think all this is to him, is this is a gig. So I think if anyone will quit, he'll tap out early because he doesn't have that drive that makes you push beyond the hunger and fatigue, because he's going to get some money.
Right.
The reunion money. And
yeah, but he's going to learn there's no timeouts in Survivor. There's no halftime. There's no timeouts.
You touch on an interesting point in that what's happened over the last few seasons, and I've heard this from people on the inside, that Survivor has inroads now, or the casting people, the SEG people. They put out feelers, and they have lists now of, you know, the sort of semi-celebrities or the people who want to boost, the Liesl Welchels of the world.
Right.
Those are the people that they are reaching out to, also professional athletes, now with CAA, having connections with agents and representing athletes. Hollywood and all of that is all getting mixed together. And they want these people that they can promote as being celebrities or semi-celebrities or people that you might remember. And you know, bringing them on the show for a little bit of a rating spike or a promo spike. And so they reach out to these people and try to find them. And these are the people who, you know, it's someone like Liesl Welchel refuses to go on again. She was invited to go on again, Blood vs. Water, with Justice.
Yeah.
And they said no because she doesn't want to go through that again.
Right.
But she got exactly what she wanted. She got the career boost she wanted. That's why they're doing it. Cliff wants some sort of relevance, and so he's doing this thing, but if anyone's going to quit, it's somebody who really isn't all that excited about being out there.
Right.
Oh, you know what? And Survivor contestant came to mind when you said they're recruiting people, celebrities, agents. He played on Redemption Island, the retired football player. They called him T-Rex. I can't think of his real name, but he lasted, I think, until day 30 or something.
Was that Grant?
Yeah, no. The big guy with dreads. It wasn't him.
No, it was the older man, retired professional football player. They had, the Silver Fox.
Oh, you mean the?
Oh, Jimmy Johnson.
Johnson.
He wasn't on Redemption Island, though.
Yeah.
No, but he's not memorable at all because he. He was a very muscular guy, and he didn't have food, and he just lied there, and he didn't do much of anything.
Right.
You're not talking about Shamar. I'm just kidding.
Season 22.
Season 22.
Shamar, the incredible sulk.
Yes. No. I think Shamar brought his own grain of sand to the island.
Yeah, because, you know, as we all know, the cure for a grain of sand in your eye is to rub it incessantly and jam your finger into your cornea and take me home.
That is exactly the cure.
Now, Grant Matos was a former wide receiver in the NFL, but I thought he was more involved in that, especially with Rob. He was following Rob pretty well. Until Rob cut him off.
There was a lot of animosity between the two of them after the show ended, because Grant thought he was going to go to the end, but you know, with Rob, and Rob was planning on taking him deeper, but something happened where someone got immunity that wasn't supposed to, and so Grant had to.
Yeah.
So
Andy, is there anything else that you wanted, as we're approaching 2 hours, is there anything else that you wanted to mention on tonight's show or that you wanted to bring out that we haven't asked you about?
I don't think so. I mean, I know that...
Maybe sixth grade shout-outs or anything. Go to bed. Okay, well.
Yeah. If anyone from Renbrook is watching this right now, go to bed.
Yes, we have homework.
I think we've managed to touch on most everybody. The only thing that we talked about before was talking about favorite seasons and favorite players, but we even touched on a bit of that as well. So, this has been a lot of fun. I'm trying to think. Well, one player we didn't talk about, I'm actually kind of curious what your read is on her, is Jatia.
Yeah, Jatia is going to be – I'm not sure what to think about her, but I do think she's going to not really like living on an island. And I also think she's going to be somewhat annoyed by people's idiosyncrasies or their lack of skills in certain areas. You know, I think she'll have a low tolerance of different people. Kind of the way I get from her.
I'll tell you what I think. In our fun office pools, our pool that we have with our Facebook page and our friends, I've split my points for episode one between Cass and Shatia. So that's what I think. I agree that she's going to be out of her element in the island. She even says, I'm going to be the first one complaining. I'm going to be the one talking about how hot it is. I don't want to sleep here. And I think that's going to, if they come back from losing the challenge, knowing they have to go to tribal council, that's the last thing they want to hear is a complainer. Yeah. They would want to hear how we're going to make it up. Yeah.
Right. They would rather keep Cass than keep Jatia.
I think Cass is smart enough that if she sees that, she's immediately going to go quiet. She's not going to complain. She wouldn't say anything. She's going to let other people stick out and be pains and go that way. I don't know. I just don't get – I know we had a lot of people pick Jatia to win. We had a lot of people
pick her.
Yeah.
Starting to see a lot of – like I'm getting the sense like she's somebody that – like you know when Probst says that there are players that he didn't think would go very far and then did, I'm getting that like – Nayanka vibe off of her, like she's going to be abrasive and annoy people and yet somehow find her way, you know, into the merge.
She could find the idol. She could be the one that finds that idol.
Maybe.
And if she plays it the right way, she could, right, she could idol her way to the end.
And to contrast Jatia, you have Tasha, who will be the most pleasant person you've ever been around.
Yeah, I mean, I in my first round of predictions, I had her, you know, being my top pick. I mean, I love her as a player, and I bet I would love her as a person if I sat down with her. She's so sunny and open, and the body language and all that social psychology stuff, she's got it in spades. Yeah. And I just think that the brains are going to end up getting smacked around pretty hard early, which means that they won't have the majority late. And so, and people probably won't trust them post-merge because you're the last brains left and we can't trust brains in the end game. So,
and then you might get a couple of brains that feel like they're the swing vote. I'm the swing vote. Whereas the alliances will look at them and say, no, you're fodder, and you're the first one to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to be a floater who could be a swing vote if you come from brawn or beauty, but no one's going to trust a brain to be a goat boat.
Can these brains be humble? Hey, I'll be your fifth and help you take them out. Just make me fifth. Give me the chance to be fifth. I mean, will they be trustworthy? Or will they go in there and say, this is what you need to do? How will they approach these alliances and say, I'm the swing vote, so use me in this way and I'll help you? Or, you know, it's a social game. It goes back to the social game.
Yeah, I pointed this out in a late column last season, and it's a big one that you just touched on, that you know that Tyson did really well last season. Every time he talked to Jervis, it was about both of their chances to win. He was always using the collective pronoun. It's like, when we get there, haven't we played a great game? We. And that's what I worry about somebody like Garrett. Is he going to be a lot of I?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and we saw that with a guy like Russell at the end. It's still one of the things I was thinking about over the last few days, like how you can screw it up at the end. And when it got down to the final two or three, he was standing around talking about what he's going to do with the money.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and you know, just you know how everyone's playing for second, and it's just like, ew, it's a social game, and you stop playing it at just the wrong time.
Yeah.
Well, that's what set Jervis off, because he said Tyson said it was we, it wasn't he, it was we.
Right. Yeah. Well, all right. Anything else, Shayna? Anything else on YouTube or anything?
She's asleep, so we got to wake her
up. Sorry. Wake up.
Yes. Well, just Steve Wright was the guy I was talking about who was on Redemption Island, retired from the Raiders. But, I don't think she got touched on at all, but what about Trish? What are your thoughts?
Trish, I think I pegged her to be around that 7 to 9 spot. Because I see Sarah and Lindsay coming together, and I see sort of Tony and Cliff as you know these two battling alphas. I don't know why I kept seeing like Wu and Trish maybe coming together. You know, one's a martial arts instructor, one's a Pilates instructor. But also just being a part of that four. And she seems likable. She seems nice. She seems like she's somebody that you would include in an alliance because she seems trustworthy and loyal, and she'll follow. She's got a bit of a Culpepper edge to her where you worry, even though she's older, she's fit. And so many of those post-merge challenges favor that body type. That, you know, you see her and someone like Wu being targeted in that post-merge, we need to get rid of any immunity challenge threats. And I think you have enough savvy players around to identify that. I like her. I didn't like her at first. Her first interview was just so heavy on the Boston accent, and I was like, I don't know. This is a single mom, you know, aggressive, but I don't know if she knows the game. But then she softened somewhat, and there's a bunch of photos of her in camp just looking like she's camp mom. She's making life easier for the rest of them, and I think that'll get her ensconced in some sort of alliance. So I think she's going to be around for a while. I don't know if she'll win. I don't know if she could win, but I think she'll be around for...
I got like Sherry vibes from her from both of the interviews. She reminded me of her, but the situation is better for her than it was for Sherry. Sherry was in an alliance with a bunch of college kids, whereas Trish seems like she's in an alliance with more mature adults. Yeah. And I can see her and Wu, I agree, both instructors, they find each other on the beach, stretching, doing yoga, and they look back and there's Tony and Cliff, and then there's Sarah and Lindsay just looking at them, and Wu and Trish go, let's go talk to Sarah and Lindsay and see if they want to make a foursome. So I could really see that. I think she's in a better starting point than Sherry was. But I got this. Well, I got that energy, same energy from Sherry there from her.
And particularly, and just to add on to that, I think she's in a better spot than Sherry in that when they do finally swap and then merge, she's not suddenly dealing with, you know, returning players.
Right,
she's
going to
be dealing with other newbies who will, you know, be more open to welcoming her in and not being seen just as cannon fodder. So,
especially if she does well at challenges too, that would make her look good as well.
Yeah, because I think after you get the swaps, if the you know, challenge strength is going to be really important, and you know, players like Spencer and Bryce could find themselves on the outs simply because, you know, when you reshuffle tribes, everyone looks at one another and they trust some, don't trust another, but they tend to, in that immediate aftermath, hack out a physical liability, and that's and I think Trish avoids that.
Well, Dwayne, my list is done, and I think Andy's first bell is in about 3 hours.
Yeah.
So we should probably start wrapping up.
Andy has slowly begun to look more and more haggard as the podcast is going on.
Yeah.
He's still all there.
Yeah. Well, hey, Andy, it's been a lot of fun, and I just want to make sure everybody knows that they can find your blog on True Dork Times. They can also link to it from our website. It'll always be on that right side. And it's really a really good blog. I will tell you all this. You need to sit down. Like, you have a couple of 15-minute breaks while you're at lunch or while you're at work. But really, really good insight, really good blog to read. I'm pretty sure Andy has a thesaurus sitting beside him when he writes it. There's always one or two words I got to go look up. But
I'm an educator. What can I say?
Yes.
You can also find it on our Facebook page, which is groups.com/SurvivorTalk. We always post it on there.
Yep.
I appreciate it, guys. I know I told you this beforehand, but the podcast is great. Would love to come back on again at some point and continue to talk shop because you guys are doing a good thing and you're just fun to talk to. So.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Well, we're here all season. So
All right. We're here all night. In all seriousness, y'all, if you want to follow Andy Baker on Twitter, Andy, how do they do that?
It's at GetOnSurvivor. Obviously, the name speaks for itself. Oh, and before I forget, Shana, thank you so much for helping out, and I like your blog.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. Shana, we love your blog. Yeah, all three of them. Yeah, Shana's really good about responding, too. We've had a couple people comment on her blog, and Shana gets right on there and responds back. So it's always good on our website. We've always got two shows for every episode, and, of course, we have Shana's blog and Katya's blog. Links to Andy Baker's blog. And, David, what are you going to be doing this season? Are you going to be doing any blogging, or are you going to do something else?
No, I'll probably just do the rankings.
The power just do the rankings. Episode.
Yeah, we've got enough free blogs. I don't need to add any fodder to that. My blog would be the fodder that gets pushed off the side of the website.
All right, y'all. Go to our website, SurvivorTalkWithDND.com. If you're going to shop Amazon, please do so using links from our website. Help support the podcast. You can also push the little PayPal button if you'd like to do that. Again, it was great having Andy on. Shayna, thanks again for being a wonderful prospect and hanging around and getting your computer all situated. It's always a pleasure having you on. And that's all I got. How about you, Dave?
I'm good.
All right. See you, everybody.
See you.
Good night. Take hold of these impurities. Give you this wretched soul. Some of my feet on the floor.